Hello and welcome. It's our bonus Q&A episode of Books of the Year. Daniel Finkelstein is here. Hitler, Stalin, Mum and Dad is the title of his sort of family memoir, which we discussed in our previous podcast. Go back and listen to that if you want to hear Danny talk about his current book. So this is the Q&A. These are the questions with slight variations that we ask every time we have an author with us. Question number one, Daniel, what is the last book that you really, really enjoyed reading? And the second really is quite important. It's not just something that you thought was pretty good, but that you maybe recommended to other people.
I really, really enjoyed reading Damon Centola's book, Change. So I'm a real sucker for social psychology books, books on how people think. Robert Cialdini's Influence, for example, amazing, amazing book. And this, that book kind of spoilt me for lots of other books because it covers so much. But this is new. This book, Damon Centola's Change, is about how political views or other views spread from one person to another. Lots of experimentation and how and where tipping points are. I thought it was really good. It was very well written. And unlike a lot of books of this kind, it got going. It made its point. He made the point and got out. And sometimes you feel like thank you very much.
Is that a nice way of saying it's not very long? It's not.
Yeah, but it's not. It's not like a tiny book, but it just lots of books, particularly American books. Actually, I find they really are twice as long as they need to be.
Physical book or e-book, what would you prefer?
So I read e-book almost exclusively. Right. And the reason for that is because I want to carry it around. I've probably got 2,000 books on my Kindle. I like to get the books immediately when I know that I want them. And I have my Kindle with me constantly, and that's the best way. But I have to admit that when the proof for this, my book, Hitler, Stalin, Mum and Dad, came to me, I had to read it in physical form because it wasn't obviously in an e-book. I wanted to read what it looked like on the page. And I really enjoyed doing that. So I wonder whether I haven't been making a bit of an error. There is something very nice about the physical book, but, you know, mainly for reasons of practicality, because I like to cover it around, you know, carry it around. I used to drive my wife crazy. Do I take both volumes of a book on De Gaulle on holiday when they're, you know, 600 pages long, and then she would just go, shut up, Eva. So I've now solved this problem by just having them on ebook.
The great thing about the physical copy, though, is that you can underline. And I always have my pen, and I always, so your book, I'm afraid, is underlined and questions written at the back and all kinds of things. You can't.
I've got a family thing where my grandfather, Alfred, who collected many, many books, absolutely hated underlining things or writing. He wouldn't mark the book at all. He thought it was sacrilegious, basically. And so when the Nazis come and they do something called Pulst, they take everyone's property. They took all of his books and they kept them in this warehouse. And afterwards, it was possible to identify what they were. Not many people had his sort of book. He couldn't get them back because he hadn't marked any of them. So I think it's sort of family thing. I remember sitting on the tube and a person he had a book on Catholicism. I still can still remember them because it was so painful this moment. And he had a red pen. He took a ruler out and he underlined. And when he did underlined it, I inadvertently went.
So what do you think? Because I've underlined. Look.
Yeah, well, it's all right because that's the proof edition, right? So you're allowed to. Don't do that.
Okay. Is there, Daniel, is there a book that stands out from your childhood for being particularly inspirational or meaningful?
Well, look, a book that means a lot to me, this is a very idiosyncratic choice, but it does, is Winnie the Pooh.
Excellent. Right?
So if you wanted a book that summarises the whole human condition with brilliant wit, whose gentle humour, first of all, really strongly reminds me of my mum, which is always a good thing about anything, but whose gentle humour really says what it means without hammering it too hard, that is it, really. I think that's an amazing book. So that has definitely influenced both my sort of attitude to humanity and my way of writing. But as I begun to become, you know, more interested in sort of serious books, certainly To Kill a Mockingbird was an amazing influence. Just how compelling that was. And that's the first book I read to the end. And I thought, I can't believe I finished this book. So I started again.
Just before Matt does the next question, are you, therefore, on Winnie the Pooh, are you Eeyore or Tigger? Which would you be naturally?
No, I would like to think of myself as Pooh, really, Winnie the Pooh. Yeah, I'm probably more like Piglet. I don't think. But you see people who are Eeyore the whole time, don't you? I'm definitely not Eeyore. I'm definitely, if that's a spectrum, I'm definitely at the Tigger end, definitely.
Okay. You've lived and breathed politics, and we've had political writers on this podcast, we've had politicians on this podcast, and they all seem to answer this question the same way, so I'm intrigued as to how you're going to answer it. Are you drawn to political memoirs and stories, or do you avoid them?
No, I'm drawn to them. And one of the most interesting projects I've been involved in is I've set for myself was to read one biography of every prime minister. So I basically, not in chronological order, I did them around, I finished with Jim Callaghan, I think, but I did start with Robert Walpole, and I read, there are two or three prime ministers there aren't biographies of. I use the National Dictionary of Biography for them, but for most people there are, with in varying qualities, biographies. And that was amazing. It meant that I was able to create a historical grid. And so, for example, my wife and I went to Jane Austen's house, and I thought, okay, when she was writing, that was when Lord Liverpool had just become Prime Minister, Spencer Percival's just been assassinated. You can work out what was happening in the world of any event of history once you created this grid. So reading a biography of every Prime Minister was an amazing project.
But so that's obviously historical, but would you be interested in political memoirs of, say, you know, more current politics?
So I've just read Wes Streeting's book, which I found really, really interesting, actually. And I do read them. I don't read apps, you know, there's some politicians, I'm not that interested in them. And I don't read everybody's memoirs. I really like diaries. They can be really good. So I would say I'm sort of half on that, yeah. The biographies I've read, memoirs less often.
We always like to surprise our guests, if possible, with a question from a fan. So we have a little voice note here from Times Radio, someone you know very well. This is Matt Chorley.
Hi, Simon. Hi, Matt. And hi to Danny. Now, as you know, Danny, I'm a huge fan of all of your writing, but particularly this book. And one of the things that went through my mind when I was reading it, and one of the real tragedies, is that as a result of the events and the story that you tell, there are far fewer Danny Finkelsteins in the world than there should be. And that makes me sad. But what I'd like to know is, in the course of all the research for the book, did you find out things about your family, about your mum and your dad, that didn't make the book, but your pleas at the process of writing the book helped to unearth?
Yeah, absolutely. So I didn't want to tell follow every minor detail and every minor person, because then it would be difficult for people to work out who was who in the book. But my grandfather's brother dies, my paternal grandfather dies in Iran, building the Iran Railroad of Typhus. And at the time that he dies, I see from the correspondence that his wife was actually living with someone else. And my grandfather never could forgive his sister-in-law for that betrayal. I thought about putting that in a book because it's obviously very interesting, and I didn't want to kind of avoid something that was difficult for the family. But actually, in the end, it didn't fit, just because I'd have had to do so much explanations to who the people were. But I sort of knew that. I knew that my grandmother had a low view of her sister-in-law, but I'd not really fully understood it until I read it in the correspondence.
Is there a writer where you will always pick up their work, always pick up their winner? It doesn't matter what they're writing about, you will definitely pick up that book.
So I'll always read everything that Robert Harris writes. Mm. That's partly because I think he's brilliant, and partly because he's a friend and we often talk about his view of books, so I'm always interested when they're going to come out. From people I don't know, I try and read everything that I can lay my hands on. Unfortunately, he's now no longer alive, of David Halberstam's. They're quite long books, but The Best and the Brightest, for example, is an amazing book, as is his book, The Powers That Be, about the rise of the media. About baseball, the way that he writes about these things is totally brilliant. And so that has been quite influential on my style, everything. So I try and read everything that he...
When Robert Harris was last on the podcast, I remember him we asked him about whether he'd be quite happy not never to read the Bible or the Book of Common Prayer ever again. And he sounded very chuffed that he wasn't going to have to inhabit the Puritan mind for his next book.
I know. I felt with this Desert Island Discs thing, they always go, we'll obviously give you the complete works of Shakespeare and the Bible. And you're thinking, can I have something else? Would that be all right?
Exactly. We always like to find out about writing process. We've had a few hints. In fact, when you were talking about Robert Harris's ordering of your suggestions about how you should order your notes. But as a journalist, are you instinctively drawn to deadlines? Do you work well with deadlines or do you revolt against them?
No, have to have a deadline. And my great feeling, it's like being late. Being late is pointless because you still have to get there and it still takes you just as long, right? So you may as well be on time. It's just as easy. And exactly the same thing is true with deadlines. You may as well deliver it to the deadline since you're going to have to do the work anyway. And what's the point in leaving it and being a year late or 3 months late? So deadlines are very important to me, and I did this book in a journalistic way, so it was quite daunting to me. I have not written a big book like this before. The book I had before was I did edit and wrote lots in, but it wasn't, you know, it was a book of columns. So it's the first project of this kind I've taken on, and it's difficult to kind of sit, glue yourself to the seat for long enough with all the other things that you're doing and make sure that it's good enough. And each day you write 1,000 words, but not 1,000 of any words. They've got to be 1,000 good words. They've got to be 1,000 words that you can live with and print, and then someone can read 4 years later on a podcast and you can think, okay, I don't mind having written that. So it's deadlines are very important in that. If I hadn't had a deadline to write to, I'd probably never have finished it.
How do you order your bookshelves, Daniel? Is it a complete mess? Is it done by colour? Is it done by author? How do we?
Okay, so I have areas of certain topics. All the Prime Minister's books go in one area. I've tried to put all the American books in another area, but one of the problems I've got is I've got so many books that I've now double banked them, and it's a bit difficult. And I've been thinking about the fact that it's quite hard to find some of the books that I'm looking for. So I have to I stare at them a lot so that I memorize.
Double banked? What does double banked in that?
Well, they put one book and then another book on the shelf in front of the book.
Oh, I see, right.
Because otherwise I wouldn't have enough space. I'm not going to not have them. When people color code them, my son's done that sometimes, and I don't understand how you do them like that. So I've not done that, no.
We've just got time for one question each before we're done. If you went back to university, if you were granted another year or 3 years or whatever, what would you study?
History. I studied economics, and I'd study history. I love it. I realise that's, you know, if I was studying it for passion. Right? So obviously my middle son is studying design engineering. That is an amazing subject. If I had the capacity to do that, I'd love to do that. My dad was an engineer. My brother's an engineer. I'd love to be able to have, and my sister's got a degree in engineering as well. I'd love to have the capacity to do that. I don't think I do, but so if I was doing it vocationally, I would try and see whether I could do that, because I can do the maths. I'd have to do the physics and that'd be harder. But my sister, as I say, my sister can do it, for pleasure, I'd do history.
So if we're going to talk about history, let's finish with a history question. If there was anyone from history that you could do a sit-down, in-depth interview with, who would it be?
God, there are so many people. But I think reading all the books on the Prime Ministers reveals the centrality of Pitt the Younger. I think if you were trying to cover historical political period and understand the political motivations for it, he would be the person that you would do it. Obviously, more contemporary figures, you'd obviously love to meet John F. Kennedy or, you know, Robert Kennedy. I'm fascinated by the Kennedys, or even Nixon, right? But I think if I wanted to get a view of British history, Pitt the Younger.
Did he invent income tax?
Yes. He was one of the people who introduced it. But it was more that lots of sort of political leaders, because he was prime minister for so long, were either Pittites or influenced by Pitt or opposed to Pitt. He shaped a lot of politics for a very long period of time, and really kind of quite a lot of the modern conservative movement, as well as obviously the Napoleonic conflicts as well. So I think he would have been you know, really, really interesting figure.
Daniel Finkelstein's book is Hitler, Stalin, Mum and Dad's, published by HarperCollins. It's out now. It's in the charts. So, you know, hurry, hurry. You can hear him discuss that book in our other podcast if you haven't got to it already. He'll be back next week for another Books of the Year. Going to be joined by international best-selling author Lisa Jewell. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you then.